Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
11 o'clock hour. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. We'll get to some of the latest rumblings in the draft coming up a little bit later on in the show, including, sounds like a couple teams willing, at least shopping, number two, number three. That'd be the Browns and the Giants. So maybe it's just a smokescreen as well, trying to convince teams that they're willing to trade out of those spots when all along, maybe after all this, we see quarterbacks go 1-2 and surprise everybody, or 1-2-3 or something like that, some combination of that. We shall see. We'll get into more of the draft props coming up on Thursday, on the day of the draft, and go through some of those player-specific ones, position-specific ones, and, of course, on Thursday, give our final picks, not just for who the Chiefs we think will take, but what happens in the entire first 10 picks. We'll do a little mock draft on the show as well. That's coming up on Thursday's show, and, of course, Thursday night we'll see at the Landing in Liberty. That's our draft party here on The Fan. We'll have Christian Ocero, Jake Binkley broadcasting live at the Landing beginning at 6. I'm sure all of us will hop on the show at some point as well. We'll all be there at the Landing in Liberty having a good time watching the draft Thursday night.
I think Binkley's mock is out. They got a new mock out. Is that right?
They do.
We don't have to play the sounder yet, but the last couple of times you've ignored him, he's been very mad at you, Drew. So
okay, hang on a second. We've gone through each mock that he's done.
Not fast enough for his taste.
Okay.
That's all I'm saying.
Well, maybe we'll get to it today.
Okay.
Maybe.
Now it sounds threatening.
Yeah.
Sounds like he's threatening you, Bink, if you're listening.
He's calling me out, all right? I'm not going to let him just, I'm just going to bend over backwards to have the character concerns mock the first one revealed today.
In fairness, he has, like, he said it to your face at least. We got to give Binkley credit.
True that.
He doesn't just, like, send it via text or say it through the pipeline. He says it to your face in the show. He'll join us, of course, tomorrow, as he has during Wednesdays in order to go over some of the mock draft stuff.
Bink doesn't sleep this week, okay? He is up 24/7.
You and I have agreed on one thing the Chiefs have done. Each of the last time, like the last time they got their ass kicked in the Super Bowl, they made some big time adjustments and went all out trying to solve their offensive line problems. The last time it was way more drastic than this time, where they actually let go of a better offensive lineman. They did franchise tag Trey Smith, and now we're just kind of waiting to see what they do at the tackle. And they signed Jalen Moore to a small deal. And now we're waiting to see what they do at maybe guard or some of the other positions, backup tackle, whatever. I was thinking more about it, and it's going to come off as a criticism. I guess it's meant to be at least a little, not like overly critical, but to the point. Am I allowed to be annoyed that the same Achilles heel has popped up each of the times they've gotten their ass kicked in a Super Bowl or a postseason run? Why is it that the only problem, the only thing that completely holds them back from winning a Super Bowl is the offensive line? They had bad, bad wide receivers 2 years ago and still won the Super Bowl. They didn't have anyone over 850 yards receiving in the wide receiver unit and still won a Super Bowl. They had, I guess, the defense in year one with Mahomes, year one, like the very first year Brett Veach was the general manager. I could make the argument that that was the real reason they lost, not the offensive line. The rest of the time, it seems like they've had a consistent Achilles heel, and it's the offensive line. Like, at some point, I kind of want you to just, like, you know, like, sacrifice other versions of the team in order to, like, protect your quarterback, I guess.
Yeah, it's come up. It's been an issue for this regime. Now, I would say, much like how we've talked about, you know, making the effort to do it until you actually do it, nobody is going to, you know, give you credit for it, right? They have multiple times tried to fix it. It's not like they haven't solved
it. It's not even like a cheap fix now, unfortunately.
It is very difficult to find a long-term answer at left tackle. When you are, I'll say, I feel like we're deja vu from yesterday. When you're picking 28 to 32, it's very difficult to do that. Now, last year was a second round.
They went for Trent Williams a couple years ago. They came up short, but they tried.
And they traded for Orlando Brown Jr. instead.
They should have just signed Orlando Brown Jr.
I swear we had a conversation about this.
Oh, we did. We absolutely. We said it could be worse.
At the time, for everybody that was upset with Orlando Brown Jr.'s play, we're like, you think it can't get any worse? You sure? How many of you would have liked Orlando Brown Jr. as your left tackle last season? I think all of us would have said yes. So it's one of those things where sometimes you don't realize it can in fact get worse. I'm with you though that, of course, it has been an issue they have not found a long-term solution at, is left tackle.
If it's hard to find it at 28, shouldn't you just be doing anything you can to trade with a team for one? Like, if what you're acknowledging is true, and I'm not saying it's not, it is very difficult to find a tackle specifically. I think in other positions, we can make less of an excuse, but a tackle specifically, it's very tough.
Patrick Mahomes and this organization can mask a wide receiver room that's ineffective. They can mask, he can mask a running game that's not effective. Left tackles, a turnstile at times, can't do much about it. Can't really do a whole lot about that within reason. And you have an injury risk involved there as well. And then if you also have the right side that, well, it's not as bad as the left, your right tackle still isn't exactly Mr. Consistent, even though I do think he got better throughout last season. But this will be his last year in Kansas City. I'm talking about Juwan Taylor, obviously. So I hear you. I think the one thing I'll push back from this past Super Bowl, yes, the O-line was a huge reason.
Yeah, they got wrecked.
I also think when you get beat that badly, it's also because you had nobody getting open. So what I'm getting at is the skill position players on the team also problematic in the Super Bowl and last year. As much as everybody easily is going to go say left tackle, left tackle, left tackle, and no doubt it was, I think it also has to be some of, hey, Travis Kelce wasn't getting open. Xavier Worthy until the fourth quarter wasn't a factor. Hollywood Brown wasn't a factor. Obviously, Rashee Rice was already hurt, but you get what I'm saying? It's like their skill position players were non-factors in that game as well. Yeah, the O-line contributes to some of that, but that tells you why that we all think they needed to get more explosive at running back and at other positions this offseason.
Can you cover? I guess that's really the question here. And this is where I'm talking about, like, I'll take the sacrifices in order to be a better team on the offensive line, because I've always been convinced and not really gotten much of an opportunity because the Chiefs have not had a fully elite level offensive line all together at the same time, except if you go back to probably when it was Fisher, Schwartz, and a really good interior, they were probably like one of the five best-ish offensive lines probably during that stretch.
Mm-hmm.
Part of me thinks you can cover all of those issues, like what you're saying, the lack of speed, the lack of explosiveness, if he can stand upright. And like, I'm just convinced, and like we haven't had a chance in years to explore that possibility. The Orlando Brown, they were probably closer, and they were a really good offense during that time. They were one of the better offenses.
Because we all watched the Bucs Super Bowl. Mahomes was running for his life in that one. This one against the Eagles.
And that was more injury related.
This one against the Eagles, there was just flat out nothing there. Like,
they couldn't block.
Well, he didn't have to run for his life. He didn't have time to try to run for his life, right? The play was over immediately. I mean, it was ridiculous.
I guess part of the reason I'm asking this, and like what we see they do in this draft is, and what they do in the trade or anything else, is that considering the fact that their offensive line got manhandled, this doesn't exactly feel like an aggressive approach to fix this, does it? Anyone feel like the Chiefs have been crazy aggressive in their approach to fix their offensive line? Same right guard, same center, same right tackle, worse at left guard, and a relative unknown at left tackle. Not a total unknown, but like better at left tackle, but to what degree? Worse at left guard, to what degree? We don't know. Like, I'm just saying they haven't taken the most aggressive line to fix the offensive line yet.
I hear you, but once I feel like this again.
Saying like, hey, what was the other options available to
them? Well, no, I'm going to say
year,
like,
it's a very particular.
You said, what have they done? And then you started by listing off the good things about the O-line. Like, of course they weren't going to adjust center. Already pretty darn good. Yeah. Of course they weren't going to adjust right guard. Yet. Right tackle, they're just stuck, right? Yeah. They're stuck. So really we're talking about left guard and left tackle, and I agree, right? Left guard is not going to be as good as last year. It just won't. Now, can it be at the level that it was at least when Mike Caliendo was playing? Well, Mike Caliendo might be the starting left guard this year. Maybe it's Kingsley. We just don't know. They're going to compete. We talked about that already towards the beginning of the show. Andy Reid mentioning that will be one of the camp battles, it looks like, up in St. Joe. Left tackle, of course. Jalen Moore, there's a chance he's better. There's a chance, but it's a wild card right now because we haven't seen a ton of playing time from him. He was behind Trent Williams. Is there a chance that he's an upgrade? Sure. We just don't know.
I think part of it is just like it was a really tough year. So I'm trying to parse that because it wasn't a good year to try to replace your left tackle.
I still believe in free agency of who was actually available. To me, they actually did pretty damn good. Ronnie Staley was never available. What's the guy that signed with Tennessee? We were talking about he got overpaid. Dan Moore, thank you. Out of Pittsburgh.
They should have paid Ronnie Staley more than the Ravens
overpaid
did.
Him.
Reportedly, they were on same par.
So Dan Moore got overpaid, I believe. That'll be a problem for the Titans and Mike Borgonzi down the road. But nobody will care if they get Cam Ward, right? It won't matter.
They got to try to keep Cam Ward off his ass for a year, so I don't blame him for doing it.
And then really in the draft, let's see what happens on Thursday. I mean, if they do trade up like everybody's been predicting and they get Simmons, then they clearly devoted resources. Now,
then
the problem is
taking one of the more aggressive lines. Yeah.
The problem with that is once again a 2026 thing where they could go into 2026 with Jalen Moore, Josh Simmons, Wanye Moore / somebody else all competing for left and right tackle. That gives them more options than they actually had this year.
To your point on the draft, real quick, Drew, like to your point on the draft, this is, I guess my point is not even like I'm that upset. It's just they are at some point because of the thing that we know that they can't easily find a tackle at 31. Going to need to take a much more aggressive line, as in multiple first-round picks for somebody else's left guard, going for the Tunsil route, like other teams have done a couple of times over. Not necessarily this year, but you understand what I mean. Like, they're going to have to take a more aggressive line, and that might be trading up for Simmons. That might be the more aggressive line. They could go for it now, but at some point it does kind of feels like they're going to be forced into that decision one way or the other.
What would you rather have? So I think this is, for whatever reason, it's reminding me of, I know you aren't going to like the comp, but the Bengals situation of, do we take, I forget the tackle out of Oregon, who's down the Lions now.
Josh Connerly?
No. Harmon? No, whoever the Lions drafted it.
They'll already draft Penei Sewell. Yeah,
Penei Sewell.
It was Sewell or Chase. That was the conversation. It gives a little bit of shades of that, where if Luther Burden's available, let's say Luther Burden's available, Josh Simmons is available.
Well, fans are going to want Burden. I actually think Simmons in that spot would make sense.
If those are the only two picks I have available to me, I should take Simmons.
Well, that's why I'm asking you, because we talked about weapons and potentially lack thereof. And yes, they ran it back, but in a way, running it back, a lot of people maybe aren't satisfied by that based on what they did. But again, Hollywood Brown injured, Rashee Rice injured, Hollywood Brown was back, but it was not a factor. Would you rather take Burden to secure the extra weapon for Mahomes and deal with the tackle question, or get the tackle? Even because both of them, I think, are in a way kind of 2026 things. Because even if you take Burden, you have Rice, you have Worthy, you have Brown. He'd be wide receiver 4 to start out probably. And then Simmons, of course, would be the backup, or whoever you take would be the backup.
My guess is majority of fans, especially Missouri Tiger fans that are Chiefs fans as well, will say Burden. And I get it, right? I get it. Plus, we just had the discussion. Skill position players are fun, flashy, sexy, all of the above. Josh Simmons would be the better pick in that exact hypothetical, where it's between those two at 31 as well. In this hypothetical, they're not even trading up. They're both on the board at 31. And Simmons, even though, yes, Simmons is not helping you in 2025, but man, he could change everything for 5 years after. He might be one of the few legit left tackle options to give you an option where we're not having this conversation every single year. Then Jalen Moore can play right tackle in 2026.
I still think he's going like 19, but Drew, like, this goes back. I don't say some things just to get a rise of you, but this goes back to like what I said about Cincinnati. I do actually subscribe to the notion that is, if you're an elite level quarterback, there is a limit of like, I don't have to supply you you don't need five Randy Mosses to be successful. I will give you an offensive line, and then you got to make the rest of these things work. Like, you got to make the Juju Smith-Schusters, you got to make the McCole Hardmans, you got to make the like run-of-the-mill guys work sometimes inside your offensive system, just as long as we keep you from falling down. And I guess, in that case, I would rather do it.
There is a way that I think there is a one or the other situation where the Bengals chose to do the wide receivers and the offensive line has still kind of been hampered in a way where the Chiefs, do you take offensive line and let Mahomes do his thing with the wide receivers? Or based on how the offense has looked over the last 2 years, do you take that wide receiver and make sure that you got every single possible weapon that elevates your offense as much as it can, even if it means
tougher selling this year too, because I feel like they have a lot of weapons other than the running back.
Right, I think, which is the interesting part of the conversation, is them running it back with who they had last year.
The player with the bigger chance to shift your entire five-year plan, if you will, is taking the tackle, not the wide receiver. If I screw up on wide receiver, I can find one much easier, as we clearly have seen them do.
I've seen them win a Super Bowl with
tackle.
Almost no one at wide receiver they trusted.
Yeah, so you can find a wide receiver at pick. If the Chiefs are picking 29 next year or 32 next year or something, I can find a wide receiver next year at 29 to 32. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're going to be having same conversation next year. If they're picking 28 to 32 and they're looking for a long-term answer at tackle, we're going to have the exact same convo. Well, this guy, I don't know if you can get a starting left tackle at 28 to 30. There's not going to be a year in most, I would say, 9 out of 10 seasons where they're at 28 to 32.
I can't even think of the 10th season where somebody was like, you know what I see? 7 starting left tackles this year in the draft.
I don't know how often you're ever going to pick 28 to 32 and say, oh, we can just stand pat and find our long-term answer. This year, there's maybe a remote chance with Simmons, although I'm with you, I don't think he'll be there at 31, and that's why everybody's talking about them trading up. But the only reason why there's a chance with him is because he's basically going to have to redshirt a year due to the injury that he had at Ohio State last year.
Let's get into some of the other defensive side of the football. Yesterday, Trent McDuffie was on the drive, and I thought he had interesting comments on his contract as the Chiefs continue to try to figure out a way to pay everybody they love. This is what he had to say yesterday on the drive.
I mean, we're always in constant conversation. You know, I actually flew him down to California where I spent most of my off season, and we kind of just talked about everything, about the market, about different dudes getting paid. And really, for me, I don't think there's a set money target that I really want. I just want to be paid based on my value. And really, for me, it's just all about relationships. So no matter what, I just want to make sure that the relationships stay as strong as they can and don't let any of this contract stuff really affect it.
The easiest way to do that, by the way,
flying his agent out to California.
Yeah, not Andy Reid or Brett Veach
to California.
To be very clear, the only way to do that is if you stay out of the contract negotiations altogether. Do not sit in a meeting in which they try to diminish your value in some way. Not that they would. If he's saying he wants to be paid his value, that means he wants to be the highest paid cornerback in the NFL. Like, that's his value. Like it or not, Chiefs fans, Trent McDuffie's value is as the highest paid corner in the NFL.
Well, at that moment, the hope is you get it done before Sauce Gardner gets his done.
Yes, but that goes back to the same thing. Like, there's not a certain dollar amount I feel like I have to make. I just want to be the highest paid guy. Well, then pay him tomorrow, and let's get this thing under wraps so that you don't have different than Sauce Gardner. I'd be stunned if they did not get a deal done with Trent McDuffie. He's one of the best corners in the league. They traded up for him.
They want to.
There's everything that suggests he's going to get paid by Kansas City.
They want to get it done. They got to get this Trey Smith thing figured out first, but they want to get it done. I would say Trent McDuffie also, the way he said it, was a very nice way to say, like, there's not a set number, but I also want to get what I'm worth, essentially. Well, that we know what that number is, right? And you're not going to throw out the number in particular. Why would you do that? Instead, everybody can use a little common sense and look at where the cornerbacks got paid this offseason and what that dollar amount looked like. And it gives you a rough idea of where he's going to be at. You didn't even throw out a number. We can all figure that out pretty quickly.
And doesn't that also mean if he's saying, well, I'm letting my, you know, he also said, like, I'm letting my agent handle it. Doesn't that also mean there's no chance he gets it done this offseason?
I wouldn't say no chance.
Because the agent knows, I'm just going to wait this thing out because likely Sauce is going to get paid and then my guy will get a little bit more.
Like three other guys, Derek Stingley could have said the same thing. Somebody's going to sign first. I understand it's a game of chicken, but like in the end, people just kind of take their turns because it fundamentally is not going to make a huge difference between him and Sauce Gardner. We're talking about $500,000, $1 million. He just wants to be able to call himself the highest paid corner in the NFL for like, I don't know, 20 minutes.
How much?
Do you remember Travis Kelce was once the highest paid tight end in the NFL for like an afternoon before George Kittle got paid. So like, it's okay.
What was Stingley's contract again? How many per? Like 25?
Yeah, his jumped. Stingley's ended up being the deal of all of them, right?
I think
wasn't his the one that like he got paid way less? He ended up signing too early.
The initial dollar amount reported was a little misleading, I think. So the 3 years, $90 million extension, $89 million guaranteed was how they reported it. The guarantee, $48 million fully guaranteed at signing, $68 million fully guaranteed by 2026, and then $89 million.
Oh, wasn't Stingley? It was
Vess in 2027.
Sertan, that was the one who ended up being like the steal of the century, the century, but like there is a risk of being the guy who signs too early because Sertan was the guy who signed earlier. Like, damn. His number looks really good now. J.C. Horn probably could have made the argument.
He was the first one, and then it was
his number
Stingley
looks pretty good. Yeah. Stingley jumped it. You're right. Some of that is in the guarantee department, because that's the truth. Patrick Surtain got $40 million guaranteed. J.C. Horn got $46 million, so there was a pretty good jump, but it was only a $2 million jump to Derek Stingley. So the average annual per year looks dramatically different, but it's the fully guaranteed amount, not necessarily. He's going to be in that range. He's going to make $30 million per year, or $30,500,000 per year. It'll make $50 million guaranteed. The numbers aren't even hard to figure out. That's always the part for me that, like, what takes so long, other than I don't think they'll even start negotiating these deals until they figure out Trey Smith. Like, he is like a training camp problem. It is the draft. We get all those guys signed. We try to get Trey's deal done a long time. And then I'll see if for the July 25th, when he shows up at training camp, you can probably start kicking around Trent McDuffie's deal, right?
It feels like that means, based on all of this, I think this might be a really big year for George Karlaftis in terms of, like,
his deal probably won't start getting talked about till next summer.
Well, I'm just saying, in general, like, if he plateaus, are we sure the Chiefs are, I think they'd want him back, but him actually getting paid, this is a big year in terms of he can make a lot of money or he can lose a lot of money fine.
Yeah, in a year with a ton of defensive linemen, if they draft one and he's a stud, they'll wait. They got the fifth-year option. They'll wait on Karlaftis and make their decision then. I don't think his deal gets done this offseason, do you?
No. Nope.
I guess I'd be a little bit
surprised. His deal also is not going to be, like, he's going to get a nice deal, but Karlaftis is not, like, we're talking about Trent McDuffie getting the top dollar, top of the market. Yeah. Karloftis is not going to be the second highest paid defensive end in football or something like that. That's not happening.
Sure. I just think if you're wanting to pay McDuffie, if you're wanting to pay Trey, if you're wanting to eventually pay Rashee, you know, those things you have to, I think, kind of think about, especially if she ends up being the 15th.
But I do think Cody is correct that if they draft an edge rusher in the first round, and let's say he immediately looks
like
Karloftis, a stud,
he's an 8-sack guy.
Then it changes it.
And he's great.
Sure. I wish they would take James Pierce. I don't know if they're going to do it. I think he'll be on the board for him if they want to. I just don't know if they're going to do it.
It seems like he's going to be in the board between 30 and 60. He might be available with their second pick the way Kingsley was.
Well, you know what? Take James Pierce Jr. at 31, take Alfred Collins in the second round, and I'm really happy.
In an effort to get you not beat up by Jay Binkley, Drew, why don't you go ahead and give us a mock draft sounder? And then that way you can give us the Character Concerns podcast. I know, or I was told.
What are we doing?
Oh, wait, is that too early?
What are we doing?
Oh, that is too early.
Are you calling his mock draft the trash of the day?
I'm way off on my rundown. Yeah. Oh, no.
Drew and I were like, what is he doing?
I was like, I'm way off.
You know what? Why can't we do a mock draft? Let's just do it in the Chiefs right half hour. It's fine.
We were like, what are we doing?
Let's do a trash of the day instead. How about that? I'm trying to prevent him from getting his ass kicked from Bink.
Yeah, I was very confused. Very confused. All right. We'll get to that mock draft at some point in the Chiefs Red half hour.
Let's just fire it off right away.
This one has to do with folks on an airplane.
Okay.
And it was a Delta flight from Atlanta to Chicago. This happened a couple days ago, but the story just is now circulating from the New York Post. And passengers were forced to, quote, hold the plane together after a midair malfunction. So
Excuse me?
You're on a flight. And I guess what happens, the plastic, you know, ceiling covering or whatever, where you're
so it's not like falling apart.
No, but you don't know what does that mean. What if I told you all the tiles on the plane just started falling off? Would you not think something wrong is happening with the airplane? That's what occurred here. Representatives for Delta Airlines thanked their customers for their patience and cooperation. The spokesperson said the panel was later affixed into place so customers did not have to manually hold it during the flight. No injuries. The flight continued with a two-hour delay. But basically, there's footage on TikTok of basically a group of men just like extending their arms upwards to support the plane's detached, you know, top of the ceiling while at 30,000 feet. So then the flight attendants duct taped it. I mean, is that going to make you feel great? You might be right that, Cody, that is just the aesthetics of it. But I don't know if I'm feeling great if the ceiling's falling apart on my plane.
It probably would depend on the stage of life that I was in. I'll be honest. The current flight safety has taken a hit in the confidence department over the last 12 months.
Well, you and I are hopping on a plane in a couple weeks.
I know.
It'll be fine. But be honest, though, if you're on a plane and
I'd
even
be annoyed.
If the ceiling's falling apart,
flight credit.
If the ceiling's falling apart, even though it may not truly be anything wrong structurally, you don't know that. You're thinking, what? This is not right. This should not be happening. Oh, this is what would tick you off, though. One of the passengers said, all Delta offered them were 10,000 miles, which is basically $100 flight credit.
Boo! If I gotta hold your plane together, no. Have you, by the way,
was Troy G the gear on this flight?
He was one of the people holding the gear part up.
We should Photoshop that. The gear just holding up the flight inside.
One of the best defensive ends in Chiefs history.
He unfriended
me.
I told you that.
Oh, no. So he's caught wind of us.
One of our listeners told him about our
somebody
story.
Somebody ratted?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, come on, guys. We were trying to catch up with him when he comes in town. You know,
you're saying you Photoshop him into a photo that looks like
the ceiling falling down, and he's holding it up for everybody,
and then
like
tag
Superman,
and then tag him and say, "Hey, I heard that you were. Yes. You know, I'm glad to know you're okay.
Please do that. They absolutely would
have to. In this scenario, in my opinion, they kind of have to give you the cost of your flight in credit.
But
I'm saying they should, right? Like, that's the right thing to do. The other part about it is like. The gate agents, they act like they're coming. It's coming out of their pocket. It's not coming out of your pocket, okay? You don't have to get stingy with the miles.
But it's
there.
Also not their decision, right? People that yell at the gate agent, please don't do that. It's not their fault.
No, it's not
their fault.
Have you ever? I always see people talk about like people asking to change seats. Has anyone ever asked you to switch seats in a plane? I've never been asked.
Like while I'm like from a gate attendant or
no. Like you know, has everyone been like, hey, can I want to sit next to my son? Has anyone ever asked you to switch seats? I've never been asked.
No, I've seen other people get asked.
Ooh, so you've witnessed? I've never even witnessed it.
Yeah,
that's kind of
happens more and not like
deal.
I've flown Southwest a lot. Oh, that's getting ready to change because they're taking away all the reasons why I would fly them. So, well, I mean that's the truth.
Yeah,
I fly them for the you know like. Those reasons.
Yeah, I got
the bags for free.
One last flight with the free bags coming up, and then they're not free anymore.
But yeah, I just didn't know if anybody's ever been asked. You ever been asked to switch seats? So you sit next to the kid or something?
No.
I'll be honest.
I'll say
I'm a big fan of like, if you wanted to sit next to your kid, you probably should just bought a seat next to your kid. I, you know,
Whenever I've flown a plane, I've only sat in the window seat, so I'm already against the wall anyways.
If I can find another aisle seat that's not the last row of the plane, I would move. But I'm not moving from the aisle seat to three rows back in the middle seat so you can then move.
Or a window seat. Sorry, it's got to be one for one. It's got to be like...
I need the leg room, man. I got to go aisle. I used to love the window seat. Nope, got to go aisle. I need the leg room.
I just feel like I'm a borderline no switch. Like, I'm just like, I don't even care if it's one for one. Like, you're inconveniencing
me. See that top text? Someone says they actually helped tend to someone on an American Airlines flight who was having a medical emergency, obviously a very serious matter. They gave the person that helped out 50,000 points.
Good for you.
I mean, you should.
You deserve it. You deserve it.
Yeah. Honestly, feels like it should have been 100,000.
That's, I think, depending on the airline, that 50,000 points is like $500 flight credit.
All right, so you get a round-trip flight depending on where you're going. That seems like a fair trade-off. I mean, unless if I had to
depends on the airline,
perform CPR for depending on the level of medical emergency, I think you should probably already have a point value attached to it.
Somebody is in need of CPR, and they're like, is there a doctor? Anybody knows CPR on board? Cody's like, yeah, but how many points? They're like, 25,000. He's like, gonna have to do better. 50,000. Nope. And this person's dying on the aisle. Cody's like, nope. Make it 100,000, and I'll save his life.
Could you imagine if an internal memo leaked and it was just talking about the number of points assigned for each medical emergency? Emergency.
Oh, God.
That would go over poorly.
Yep, poorly. That is the trash of the day. Up next, why there should not be a draft pick at this position after what Andy Reid had to say. And yes, Bink, we will get to you in your mock draft along with Chris Unoceros next.
Welcome in to the Chiefs Red Half Hour. Every day at 11:30 with Cody and Gold on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5 The Fan.
It is the Chiefs Red Half Hour. We will get to Mock Draft 3.0 from our guys, Bink and Chris, the Character Concerns crew. They had their draft special last night. They've got the draft special Thursday night at the Landing in Liberty. You guys can watch the show as well on Facebook, Twitch, YouTube, X. Make sure you subscribe. That way you don't miss any of the shows here on 96.5 The Fan. It makes it very, very easy. So make sure you guys do that if you have not done that already. Andy Reid yesterday spoke in the afternoon. Talked about a couple different things. Mentioned, hey, the rehab's going well for Rashee Rice, which is obviously good to see. Hopefully he's ready physically to play come week one. We'll obviously find out about the availability from a league perspective as we get closer and closer. But he also said, hey, yeah, we've got a competition at guard. It's going to be Kingsley, Suamataia, and Mike Caliendo.
Who did start for them at times last year. That's not crazy.
That's why they were able to move Joe Tooney to left tackle. Hearing that, one, I'm fine. I think that's what it should be. It should be a competition between those two. But it tells me that I don't think this is a smokescreen or anything. They have no business drafting a guard until the late, late rounds of the draft. And now you hear it from the horse's mouth, so it carries way more weight. But 3+ weeks ago, we did a mock draft on this show. Drew picked one out. And we were like, what the heck? Because it had them taking a guard in the first round, remember?
Yeah.
That seemed crazy then. Now there's no chance. I don't think this is one of those, oh, they're just saying that they're going to draft a guard in the first round. It would make no sense. I actually believe them that there will be a competition between Kingsley and Caliendo heading into training camp in St. Joe. Now, who has the leg up? I mean, I still think you want Kingsley to win the job, but he has to win the job.
Same. Because I feel like his upside is still greater than that of Caliendo's. If Caliendo wins, I believe the floor is probably a little bit lower and the odds are either. But yeah, I want the person with the higher upside player typically to win the job because it speaks to me that their ability to do the job might be higher. This just goes back to investment. Right now, this is how their line lays out. And this is why Kingsley will compete for that spot. At the other four spots, they signed, was it the second highest left tackle in average annual? In the free, maybe third behind Ronnie Stanley and then Dan Moore. Ronnie Stanley, who we openly both admitted wasn't really on the open market. It turns out he'd rather be back in Baltimore based on those odds. So they, you know, decent free agent investment, middle of the road free agent investment. They have the highest paid center in the league. They have the highest paid right now, even on the franchise tag, they have the highest paid right guard in the league and one of the five highest paid right tackles. I borderline don't think you can afford a first round pick in addition to that. At left guard, knowing that you also have a second round pick tied up in left guard, because that's technically what you have in Kingsley Suamataia and the other investments in Norzad or anybody else, it doesn't make a lot of sense at first round to take guard. I don't like it. And I don't think they'll do it.
I think that's
their way of signifying to you that they're not going to do it. They're not taking Tyler Booker at 31. They might take a tackle that ends up as a guard. I can't promise you that.
Yeah.
But they if they're taking an offensive lineman in the first round, it sure as hell isn't guard.
913-586-7965. Someone said Kingsley won the job last year. LOL.
He lost it pretty quick, too.
He did, but like that has no bearing on this year. If he wins the job out of camp, it doesn't mean that the same result's going to happen, that he's going to get benched 2 weeks. I guess you're right. Factually, that is what happened. I don't think it has any bearing on the guard. We know tackles get converted to guard all the time. The chances of him becoming a guard for a couple years are actually pretty high. Actually, really high that he ends up being a guard for this team for a couple years.
Yeah. I mean, in that way, we're all, this goes back to like the MJ thing. We should all be rooting for that. Like, I take your personal opinions of like when we've given honest assessments, like of players, like you guys give me a hard time. Kansas State fans give me a hard time because I've been critical of FAU. I hope he has 15.
Make or break season for him this year, by the way.
I hope he has 25 sacks this year. Like, I just want to be very clear. Like, I hope he sets a new NFL record of 25 sacks. I hope Kingsley turns into Joe Tooney at left guard. The thing about Kingsley is, what I don't understand and you don't understand is there any reason why that isn't a good plan? The Kingsley part. What about it isn't a good plan? He's a highly, you know, he was picked in the top 70 picks of an NFL draft. He is an athletic player. He hasn't played a lot of guard, but, you know, we've seen people make that transition. If Andy Reid is telling you he deserves to be in a competition with a guy who started at left guard for them in all the way to a Super Bowl last year, it feels like they're taking him pretty serious there. That's fine with me. I just look at this as at least we can put that to bed in the draft stuff.
I think it's
hard.
You and
I don't need to entertain any draft in which they take a guard in the first three rounds, in my opinion.
Yeah. And look, he'll have to win the job in camp and prove that he deserves that opportunity over Mike Caliendo. But the you know, skepticism, I guess there's a lot of fans that are like, he was so bad at two games at left tackle, he must just be unable to play any position. I think that's what some, I mean, that's basically what a few people on the text line are arguing. And we will all find out together. I would disagree with the thought process that because someone was bad at tackle for two games, it automatically means that they can't do anything at guard.
I think people's,
that's just me.
I think people's consensus is more because, again, Caliendo was a backup that happened to start in the Super Bowl because Tooney was there. Otherwise, he wouldn't be playing.
And he had a bad Super Bowl, but he was not a bad starting left guard for a decent, not bad enough that it didn't get him to the Super Bowl.
Sure, but then why is it even a competition then? How come Caliendo can't just be the starting left guard?
Upside.
I think that's...
Caliendo can be.
Because for some people, it screams, not desperation to make the pick work out, but it screams two backup-level players that are vying for a starting spot. When, if you want to take the argument of, well, Caliendo started all the way to the Super Bowl, and yeah, he struggled,
here's
but the
why.
Whole line struggled.
Here's
why would you not just play Caliendo
and
have Kingsley be your
upside?
Caliendo is on a 1 year deal. The other guy's a rookie, second year contract, has 3 years left. He's under the age of 25. The other guy's 27 and has 1 year left, and you'd have to pay him if he actually has a good year.
Look, Caliendo played in all 17 games.
Yeah, but if Kingsley stinks, then
well,
you
then
have
they
to pick
will
Caliendo.
Bench him again. You think, I mean, if anything, it should make you feel even better that if he sucks at guard two games in, you think they won't pull him? I mean, we just saw they're willing to do it. So actually, you should feel even better about, like, they're not just going to drag him out there for 18 games if he sucks. If anything, they show with him, they'll pull his ass as quick as possible.
Can I also point out, like, Caliendo, you can definitely do worse at backup guard, and certainly guys do start at that age. He played in all 17 games last year. He started three. So, like, I mean, Kingsley should, on paper, Kingsley, like, I don't know, they don't
look,
have...
If he loses the job in camp, then it doesn't matter. Caliendo starts right away, and so be it. I don't care who really starts. You should want it to be Kingsley, though, for a lot of reasons.
And for the main reason being what, to your point a little bit, Drew, is if Caliendo wins the job, I'll feel worse about the offensive line going into the year. If Kingsley wins the job, I'll feel better. Because, like, Caliendo is 27 years old. He started three games in his career. He's been active for 25 games. I would feel better having Kingsley won the job. But I also just think, like, there is a limit. You talk about, like, this goes back to, like, wide receiver or anything else or any other position for lots of teams. There's a limited amount of investment you can put in any one position group. You can't just spend 17 first-round picks on wide receiver. You got to spread that stuff around.
I'm not saying you pick him in the first round. I'm saying them taking a guard at 95, to me, is totally fine. I don't see any problem with it at all whatsoever. Because
yeah,
I think...
I wouldn't, but I'll listen to it. I wouldn't do that, but the reason why I wouldn't do it is that tells me... You know right guard you're about to pay, so you're then going to throw in for the next year. Let's say Kingsley wins the job over Caliendo, plays okay. next offseason, Caliendo's gone, and then Kingsley is competing with the guy you sat on the bench for a full year as a third round pick. I guess what's the point at that point? I just don't get the point of the pick.
Like, if that's the case, by the way, if they take one
draft
of the third,
for next year, then if you had to, if you're really like Kingsley goes out and stinks this year, but he's good enough to start, you can go spend a high value pick on guard next year.
The other part is like, if you take one in the third round, then I want it to be, and I mentioned this at tackle. If you take a tackle in first or second round, they should be in an open competition with Moore. Open competition. They take Simmons with pick 31. This should be a straight and I'm barring him not being healthy for the beginning of the season. If they take Josh Connerly, there should be an open competition with Moore. The job's not Moore's.
I agree.
Like, if they take a third-round guard this year, then he should be in an open competition with Caliendo and Kingsley. Like, it should be a full-blown year. I mean, it should be a full-blown open competition. May the best man win. And that's your starter going forward. Because the bigger problem there is, like, Caliendo wins that. Whew, what do you do about guard moving forward?
Okay, we will get to it now.
All right. Bank is happy.
I know he's always listening, you know?
Jay Binkley and Chris Unocero came out with Mock Draft 3.0.
I still don't understand their like 0.5s.
I give him a hard time about it.
I can't track it, so I don't know what's going on. But 3.0, so this is a full mock draft.
Yes,
with every player
available.
That's
what it means.
Okay.
Yes.
So what they do at 31 is they. You and Binkley are alike, Cody, and the fact that you like Derek Harmon. He's available at 31.
Derek Harmon?
And guess who they take at 31? Derek Harmon.
Love it. Love the pick. Positional value makes sense. Fit makes sense. You know I'm not going to argue with that. I mean, yes.
Yeah.
I like the pick of Derek Harmon. I would love to know, do they tell you when they send you these, do they tell you like who else was on the board?
They technically didn't send me it. This is a post that we got. I got a notification that it dropped this morning on our... station account. So if you want to go see it, you can also go to our Twitter page and it's posted there as well. You can see the full 7-round mock.
I like to know sometimes who else is available, but that's okay.
Dylan Sampson they have at pick 63, running back out of Tennessee. I would say this is very good value for him considering he's been mocked to go early second round.
So your guy, so they get my guy in the first round, Golden, your guy in the second?
That works.
I'm not anti-Dylan Sampson. Definitely has the explosiveness that we're looking for.
Things get interesting here in the middle rounds here with it being, you know, the three picks that they have in two and round three in the round four pick. At 66, Kyle Williams is a guy that Bink loves.
Wide receiver?
He's talked about it multiple times. He likes Kyle Williams out of Wazoo. He hasn't taken
So they're going to take a defensive lineman, running back, wide receiver with the first three picks?
Get those weapons.
What's wrong with that?
Stack
wide
weapons.
Receiver, I guess. I just don't know if I feel like they're taking it that
way. Kyle Williams is interesting. I think it was Todd McShay just yesterday who claims he thinks he's better than McMillan out of Arizona.
A lot of people have fallen off of Teterow and McMillan. I mean, he at one point was a top
McMillan. Yeah,
his 40 time is slow, and apparently the whole route running thing of him not caring is rubbing teams the wrong way.
Maybe just a bad route runner. Maybe it's not that he doesn't care. Have people ever considered that? That they just don't, that they're just bad, not they don't care.
I mean,
maybe you could coach him up.
I mean, he's more of the playmaking wide receiver.
They always make it
anyways.
Seem like they don't care.
He's always been more of the playmaking wide receiver. You throw the ball up, and he's going to get the football. He's 6'5", 220. He's a big dude. And he's a high-level playmaker, maybe not the best route runner.
What Kyle Williams, this is the thing. Do you got a scouting report on him? Because here's the thing I care the most about, typically, when it comes to college-wide receivers that I really don't like when they draft is, I like productive college-wide receivers. I like guys that put up numbers when they played in college. Because I think a lot of times they get stuck with these, like, he ran a real fast 40, and then I find out they had 460 yards as a senior,
Williams.
Drew. And I'm like, I don't like it anymore.
Kyle Williams, 5'11", buck 90, 23rd on the athleticism score out of the guys at the combine. His comp is Marvin Mims Jr., ranked fourth in FBS with 14 receiving touchdowns, eighth in receiving yards, led the team with 70, started all 13 games for his team.
Strengths,
slinks by press with good feet, smooth acceleration, gets to body adjustments quickly. Weakness, inefficient footwork getting into route stem, below average catch technique allows the throw to get right on top of him. That is Kyle Williams, who's gaining more and more traction.
Shout out to Wazoo in that air raid, man.
Like, that's why Drew likes it. He was wearing the Wazoo stuff yesterday.
He's a fifth-year senior? This guy never left college. What'd you say his age was? I'm a little concerned about age
now. I'm guessing he's 23. It's my guess.
All right. A little old, but not terrible.
Kyle Williams?
Yeah. Man, he's got better sophomore year stats than some in Nevada, Las Vegas, than some other people did. In
22. He'll be 23 in November. He'll be 23 in November.
Okay, I mean, you know, competition would concern me a little. Like, has he ever played any real that 1 year in 2023 in the Pac-12? That was the only time he played like real competition.
I mean, last year they had. Last year it was more of a mixed bag in terms of Mountain West-ish schedule.
Third round pick. I mean, you know, those aren't going to be perfect picks as far as like.
No details about his family, though. Are you concerned?
Yeah. If too normal of a family. I like them to go through some stuff.
Too normal.
That way that they're tested before in life is they make it seem there. All right, who's in the fourth? Are the other third round pick?
Other third round pick is a guy that Bink has mentioned before as well. Charles Grant, tackle out of William and Mary.
Oh, okay. Oh, William and Mary again.
William and Mary. Same thing you just mentioned. Some people will be concerned about the competition, but also
I mean, William and Mary.
The film doesn't lie on him.
Okay, like logical.
Fourth round pick position is the one fits. I think that might have you scratching your head a little bit, but Bink and I are on the same page and have been in terms of drafting wide receivers. Ty Felton out of Maryland,
two wide receivers in the first five picks?
Yes, sir.
Another name I don't know. What's Ty Felton's draft
profile? T-A-I. That's T-A-I. Ty Felton.
It might be Tay Felton, so but not, I believe it's Ty.
Ty? It's T-A-I. I don't know how it's pronounced, how it's spelled. Felton, 6'1", buck 83, 14th most athletic wide receiver at the combine, according to their score. Third team all AP, all American, first team all Big Ten.
He was 1,100 really
yards on his team, 9 receiving touchdowns, 4th in the FBS with a school record 96 grabs, I'm sorry, starting all 12 games. Team captain, Cody, he's a leader.
Oh,
he's
you know
a leader.
What? True
also,
leader.
Strengths, use of high step stutter moves at the break point can be effective. Tracks deep all over his shoulder with easy confidence.
The one thing that stands out so far is they go 3 straight picks of independent. What's William & Mary? Are they in the Ivy?
FCS. They're CAA, okay. I think.
So CAA, the tribe. And then Maryland. So, like, they're not going football powerhouses with Drew's.
Same conference as Barber's Richmond Spiders, I believe.
Oh, okay.
All right.
And then we jump into the 7th round because, again, they don't have any 5th or 6th round picks.
Let me guess. Mr. Irrelevant will be the guy they've had every single mock draft.
All right, moving
draft.
Him up. Nazir Stackhouse?
You might be correct. I'll
every
let you know
single
in a second.
Mock draft. They've changed everything but that one.
With the first 7th round pick, Aronde Gadsden, the second tight end out of Syracuse, 251.
Is he going in the 7th? Why do I feel like I've heard that name before? And I don't typically hear the names of 7th round draft selections.
Okay. All right. 6'5".
Maybe he's like someone's sleeper. Is he more of a blocking tight end? In the 7th round, they're never receiving tight end. Let's just be honest.
He might be a receiving tight end because Syracuse, in terms of what they did last year with Kyle McCord, throwing it around a little bit.
Okay.
I don't know. Dalton Cooper, tackle out of Oklahoma State, is the second 7th round pick. And then Nazir Stackhouse, of course. D-line.
One thing that stands out is
Stackhouse. They've been consistent. He's Mr. Irrelevant. I will say Aronde Gadsden, Cody, we've got details on him.
Okay.
This one has a family mention.
Oh, God.
His father... Because he's Aronde Gadsden the second, by the way. So Aronde Gadsden.
That's why the name sounds familiar.
Played wide. What, you followed Winston-Salem State? He played wide receiver at Winston-Salem State. Fairness, Cody, here's why the name sounds familiar. He spent 6 years with the Dolphins.
That's it.
He caught Hall of Famer Dan Marino's final touchdown pass.
I was like, why does
touchdown pass, his dad.
NFL pedigree. Why the hell are they mentioning his college if he played in the NFL? I don't care what college he played in the NFL.
His son, though, posted 100-plus receiving yards 5 times. Tight-hipped, unfortunately.
He's a 7th-round tight end. It's fine. Not worried about the hips.
6'5", 243.
That's a big man. That feels like that again. That just sounds like blocking tight end size. I don't know what it is. The most interesting part about their draft is far other than we've seen some of these names. We've mentioned Samson and Derek Harmon and some of these other names. Is that in this entire draft, they would have the Chiefs only taking 2 defensive players. The first round pick in Derek Harmon and the very last pick of the entire NFL draft in Nazir Stackhouse.
First 3 picks I got no problem with.
Is that enough defense overall? Should we see a corner in there? Another defensive lineman in those middle rounds?
Yeah, I'm not as concerned about corner as you are. I definitely wouldn't have minded another defensive line pick earlier. But the corner is not a necessity for me.
You're saying you can get by with it if it's a later round pick.
I'm a little surprised 2 wide receivers. We're not expecting that. But
I think Bink loves the idea of 2 wide receivers. I think he said they need to take 2 wide receivers. Because Bink's on record, I think on Friday he said this, he doesn't want Juju Smith-Schuster on the roster. He wants Sky Moore gone and Juju gone. He wants him to be replaced.
I mean...
I think Bink is... way Bink feels.
So, I'm not here to argue on Sky. Okay, I mean, not exactly working here. But Juju, he still had, a good playoff game. We got to run out Juju Smith-Schuster. I mean, he still has, for a fifth wide receiver, he still occasionally has a game when he goes like 6 for 80. So like,
I would just be surprised if they had two.
It's just like a nice safety net.
I'd just be surprised they had two rookie wide receivers in the top five of the wide receiver realm.
Yeah, me too.
I can't picture that, I guess.
I mean, maybe they feel like they can do that if they've got Hollywood Brown, Xavier Worthy, and Rashee Rice taking up a good chunk and just like eating it up in that way. If you're getting to 4 and 5 wide receivers, it's a good spot for rookie wide receivers for the Chiefs typically, where they can like grow a little bit. A lot of this goes back to what you and I don't know, and none of us will know with wide receiver. I don't know about what their level of confidence is that one day they'll give Rashee Rice an extension.
Right.
Or one, you know, like they have to start answering some of those questions for themselves now. If they think there's a pretty good chance 2 years from now they're giving Rashee Rice more money, I actually think wide receiver is quite a bit further down the list. If they
shout out Rashee Rice, happy birthday.
Happy birthday. Happy birthday.
Can you do a song?
Doesn't work. Got to be four syllables. Can't even do Mr. So it's got to be like short if it works that way. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think a lot of it depends on whether or not they're thinking 2 years from now they're paying Rashee Rice. And then he'll recover from the injury and all this other stuff. They're worried about it. I could see wide receiver getting taken once in the top four rounds, and I'm always pro that. I would take wide receiver and defensive lineman with one of my first four picks almost every single year. So you don't have to talk me into that. It's just two. The surprising part for me.
Coming up next, we'll get to what's trending, and then we will get right back into the Royals, plus a draft edition of All 32 on Cody and Gold.